This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Mr. Durham, how are you?
Good morning, Mark. Great to be with you. Another interesting weekend of ACC football. We crowned a champion yesterday in field hockey. Congratulations to North Carolina on a big win. And we got a good Monday show. In fact, Eric McLean will be along, of course, with his regular Monday visit. And ironically, the head coach of the field hockey champions will be here, Karen Shelton of North Carolina. That was quite a match yesterday at Karen Shelton Stadium in Chapel Hill to determine the ACC champion.
Down 2-0, 2-zip, 2-nada, 2-nothing, however you want to call it. They come back and win, as they always do, it seems like. It's four straight and, 23 all-time. So Karen Shelton will join us later in the program, and we will go over that hot and heavy. Needless to say, though, West Durham, the biggest story of the weekend involved number one going down to number four in South Bend. Unbelievable celebration, unbelievable football game. And for Notre Dame, they have entered the conversation. They got the win they've been looking for to validate that, hey, yeah, we know Clemson's great, Bama's great, Ohio State's great, but so are we. And a humongous win, the biggest win for Notre Dame I can remember since probably knocking off Bobby Bowden and number one Florida State back in 93.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Mark. Notre Dame storms into the conversation. They don't walk into the conversation, right? I mean, they have been playing pretty well all year long, and now all of a sudden they've gotten the win that that clearly puts them into the mix with the other candidates. Clemson still included, obviously, even with the loss. You certainly think Alabama, Ohio State, and some others, and I know folks are starting to turn up the volume on some other schools as well. But the ball game delivered, and you know, you and I talk about this every once in a while, and I know we did on radio back before we came over to TV. When you get a game like this, sometimes it doesn't deliver, right? I mean, it just kind of goes through and it happens and somebody wins and the other team, yeah, didn't go our way. This game delivered. It had a lot in it and great performances, both sides. And I thought was one of those things that was worthy of kind of the buildup. And we don't often get that. So I was glad to see that. You know, for Brian Kelly and Notre Dame, there's no doubt whatsoever they took the next step. They needed to win the game. We talked about it last week. I thought Ian Book was magnificent in just so many different ways, despite the fumble into the end zone that was recovered. I still thought Book proved to be that guy that Notre Dame could lean on in a game like this. Made the deep, and we saw the vertical ball, right? I mean, they got after it in the throw game. Defensively, they delivered. I just thought Book was really, really good on Saturday night in a lot of different areas to help his team win.
Well, if you're going to knock off number one, you got to be good, right? You got to play well. And I thought Notre Dame on the trenches controlled the game. Even though they were down 33-26 with 2.5, and we'll get into this game heavy today. But I thought Notre Dame kind of dictated the way the game was played. And you knew it from the opening snap, literally. In terms of Williams' touchdown and all that stuff. But in the trenches, Notre Dame won the game. Won the game. And you know, had Clemson held on to win, Wes, I think you'd have looked back and said, man, it just seemed like Notre Dame, that was their game to win, right? Just felt that way when you're watching the ball game. And I thought all the pressure was on the Irish going into the game because they were the ones that kind of had to validate their spot in the conversation. You know, they wanted a seat at the big table with Clemson, Bama, and Ohio State. And again, nobody hands that to you. You got to go earn it. And I thought that's exactly what Notre Dame did. The thing that surprised me the most about that game was Clemson could not run the ball at all. Travis Etienne never got loose. They didn't allow him to get loose. And I thought, to me, that was the biggest surprise of the game because I thought Clemson would be able to run some. And you knew Notre Dame was going to absolutely say, hey, listen, that's our strength. We're going to run, do our thing. Ian Book was outstanding throwing the football. Great catches. I mean, they just did what you had to do to win a game like that. But to me, the biggest surprise of the night was Clemson's inability to run the ball consistently. And Notre Dame did a fabulous job up front. I thought their defensive line controlled Clemson's offensive line and really kind of put all the pressure on the freshman quarterback to make plays, and man, was he fantastic. So again, great game. And from an ACC perspective, because that was an ACC game Saturday night, you couldn't have scripted it any better. I mean, in terms of drama, the nation was watching. The TV numbers are all-time high for that particular network since 2005. Notre Dame, a storied historic program, got their biggest win this century. Clemson, despite having some guys nicked up, hey, still battled and showed what a championship DNA program they had to have the lead with 3.5 to go and a chance to ice it and couldn't get it done. I mean, it had drama. It had double overtimes. It had tradition. It had history. I mean, what more do you want? I mean, seriously, if you're a college football fan and you didn't like that game, I suggest maybe cornhole or something. I mean, you know, if that game didn't do it for you, I can't help you. But it sets the stage, though, Wes, moving forward. Notre Dame got the win they desperately seek for decades upon decades. Now they have. Now they're kind of in an interesting position because now all of a sudden, instead of fighting, climbing the mountain, in some respects, hey, they're kind of up at the peak, looking around, going, "Uh-oh, target's on us now." Moving forward, and for Clemson, where everybody just assumed every time they roll the ball out, it's a win. All of a sudden, the Tigers now have something to play for. Yeah, they still have it right in front of them. Nothing's changed from that perspective. But, you know, I said this for the last couple of weeks. They were really banged up, and they got banged up in this game too. The open date comes at a perfect time for them, but they've got some work to do as well. So it lays for a fantastic stretch run where you know who these two guys are. Miami got the huge win on Friday night to still stay in the conversation, and Wake Forest and North Carolina see each other this week. I mean, it's going to be a great stretch ride here in the ACC. But Notre Dame got the win they just desperately seeked, and they earned it. And they tip of the hat, man. It was some kind of night.
So nationally, you're going to hear a lot of conversation about that six-week track to Charlotte for Notre Dame and Clemson in a potential rematch, right? It's important to remember, though, and Mark, you just made the comment, that now everybody that has kind of got a tentacle or a connection to those two teams in one way or another – their games now also become important, right?
No doubt.
I mean, you mentioned Carolina-Wake Forest this weekend. Well, both Carolina and Wake Forest will ultimately play Notre Dame before the season is over. So, therefore, Wake and Carolina have a tentacle to Notre Dame. If you Boston College, how many different times are we going to talk about Jeff Hafley and the job he's done in year one? Well, the tentacle to Clemson was already there. Now the tentacle to Notre Dame comes up this week. Then think about the other teams that are all tied into this. It's going to be very interesting to see kind of how this this affects not only those two schools, but the rest of the ACC climb, if you will. And some teams might be picking up steam here a little bit. You know, we're getting into November. Things are getting a little more uncertain with the weather and obviously the virus and that kind of thing. But you mentioned the bye week for Clemson. Couldn't agree with you more on that, Pac. From a health perspective, Clemson needs to do that. They need to find a way to see if they can get everybody back, not just the quarterback, but also Brian Brzee, Bachhorse on the offensive line, guys like that who hopefully it's not too significant from an injury perspective, in addition to Skalski and Jones and Landon Zanders got beat up the other night in the ball game, went out.
They're beat up.
Yeah, Turner as well. They are. So maybe Clemson needs that time because no matter how much great depth you've got, sometimes when the injuries really start to stockpile, it can be cumbersome. And you get the impression that it's almost that for Clemson.
Oh, it is.
You know, you're talking about putting new guys in new spots, and it can get difficult. So Tigers get a week off. Florida State then comes in, and we'll talk about that, obviously, as next week unfolds. But classic ball game.
Oh,
congratulations to Brian Kelly and Notre Dame. It was a fantastic ball game, and worth your time. Worth your time Saturday night to see that one through.
There's another combination. We rattled off a lot of teams there with the tentacles, and I know their fan base is sick today, even still, Virginia Tech. But hey, Hokie Nation, let me tell you something. You got Miami coming here this week. And for the Canes, that was probably not the outcome that they were looking for because they've already lost the tiebreaker head-to-head to Clemson. And if they had a wish, and you went through the whole scenario last week, I thought you were spot on. Now, all of a sudden, Miami's tied with Clemson in the terms of, hey, we're in the second spot looking up at Notre Dame. So that probably did not help them. But Miami this weekend goes to Virginia Tech. And I know the Hokies are sick after what happened Saturday. We'll get to all these games this weekend.
Right.
But you know what? Virginia Tech also has in the first week of December, when I'm sure it will be a nice, balmy 6 degrees, Clemson comes to town. So the Hokies, despite kind of being on the outside looking in right now, they're going to have some say-so, too, on how this bad boy plays out. And you look at Notre Dame's schedule. You mentioned road trip to BC. And again, for Irish fans who are still celebrating like rock stars, and rightfully so, I don't need to tell you that 1993 is the last time you'd beaten a number one. You knew who you played the following week? That'd be Boston College. You know what happened?
Boston
I don't need
College.
To tell you. So this weekend, you got BC. It's Red Bandana Night in Chestnut Hill. You know, the emotion of that game, you saw the celebration on the field, which we'll get to. You saw the celebration in the locker room. Hey, and you should party like rock stars. I mean, you knocked off number one and played great doing it. But Notre Dame's schedule at North Carolina, at Wake Forest, at Boston College. And now all of a sudden the target is on your chest in some respects. From not only an ACC perspective, but nationally. Nationally. Right now, according to the AP, the Irish are number two. So it is a totally different lay of the land versus where you were a week ago. So we'll see how the Notre Dame Fighting Irish handle that. But if you're a Notre Dame fan, man, that was one of those. You've been waiting for that kind of game. So is Brian Kelly. So is Ian Book. They circled the date. They talked about it. Hey, this is our time. And they proved it Saturday night. And even though there was a spot, Wes, controlling the game, hey, with 2.5 minutes to go, Clemson's at midfield with the lead and the ball, and you're thinking, how are we going to lose this? How are we going to lose this game? Found a way to do it. That is championship DNA.
Yeah. Let's go to the ball game and get some post-game reaction. We'll start with Brian Kelly, who reacted to what a lot of people talked about immediately after the game, the field storming at Notre Dame Stadium.
And again, I'm doing a lot of things I probably shouldn't be doing, but I told our team at our walkthrough today, I said, listen, I just want you to know, when we win this thing, the fans are going to storm the field. And, you know, with COVID being as it is, we got to get off the field and get to the tunnel. Now, I beat them all to the tunnel. So that didn't go over so good. But they reminded me that I did tell them that. So my skills of prognostication was pretty good today.
That's it. If you got it, flaunt it. I've always said it, man. You know what? Because let me tell you, Brian Kelly did a lot of things that were, quote unquote, out of character leading in that game, saying, hey, listen, we've been talking about Clemson. I mean, how many times do you hear coach speak? 1 week at a time, we're going to do this and this. Hey, we won't worry about it. You hear that? If for every 1,000 times you've heard that, you'll hear a coach go, oh, no, no. Hey, we circled that calendar right there. Yeah, we're going to go play that game. We can't wait to play him. You know, Brian Kelly, Notre Dame, they wanted a piece of number one, and they got it. And you know what? Again, celebrate like rock stars, man. That's what they did.
Well, and also, you mentioned this. Not only was he open about the preparation for the ball game, post-game, he talks about the emotion of beating the number one team in the country as well.
Oh, yeah, we're extremely excited about the victory and, you know, beating Clemson. Look, all the narratives that are out there and whatever is said and, you know, talked about, that doesn't help you win this game. What we're excited about and what we're celebrating is that we played with an incredible focus and resolve. And those are things that we work on to try to be successful and win football games. That's what we're celebrating. Because you have to keep playing, and you have to show an incredible focus and determination. And that's worth celebrating when you come back and win a football game the way we did in double overtime. So we're not celebrating because we showed the world or we, you know, changed the narrative or we did this, you know, because – you know, they were the number one team in the country. We did it because we proved something to ourselves, and that's really satisfying, and that's what we're celebrating.
Amen. That's why you work so hard, man. You kind of reach that point where you say, listen, this is why you work so hard, especially during this pandemic. So for Notre Dame, man, tag, you're it. You go to the top spot. And now for everybody else, the chase is on. And for Clemson, yeah, disappointing loss, no doubt. Doesn't happen very often. But, hey, it's right in front of you now, boys. On your mark, get set, go. We are in November, and it counts. Can't wait.
Yep. Absolutely right. And we got a great stretch drive now. You know, we've got everybody tied into this a little bit. You got two ACC teams in the top four, three in the top ten. And let's see what this looks like going down the backstretch, as they say. More to come. We'll review the weekend of the ACC in a football perspective. Karen Shelton will join us. Her team won the field hockey championship yesterday. Eric McLean as well on a Monday. When we come back, holy smokes. What happened in Blacksburg on Saturday and how Liberty pulled victory from the jaws of defeat right after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday morning. We are in November. College football gets great. Karen Shelton and the ladies win another championship in Chapel Hill. We'll talk to Coach later on. Eric McLean coming up here at the top of the hour. But, Wes, there's no doubt Notre Dame-Clemson is the storyline from the weekend. Nationally, yep. Not to mention the ACC. But there were some other games in the league this weekend. And it really started Friday night with that Miami game, which we'll get to. We'll get to all these games. Ooh. But what took place in Blacksburg... Wow. And I'm sitting there watching the game live, and I fell off my couch. I literally fell off the couch in disbelief what I was watching. That may go down. Notre Dame Clemson's the game of the year so far. No doubt. No doubt. Mm-hmm. But how the game ended in Blacksburg might be the most bizarre finale that I'm still speechless with what happened there. I mean, that was... It was ridiculous how that game ended in Blacksburg.
Well, I would tell you that given what I do on Sundays, it's completely not crazy for me, but I do appreciate the fact that, you know, there was some things that went down, right? I thought Virginia Tech was going to find a way to win.
Me too.
And... in finding the way to win, again, I go back to the week before with Hendon Hooker against Louisville. And when they went on that final drive and ultimately he threw the touchdown to Trey Turner, right? I thought, you know what? There you go. That's kind of what you were looking for to win the ball game. And then, Pack, holy smokes. I mean, they had kind of, and listening to Chris and Mark a little bit in the game, they had kind of been, you know, inconsistent at best, the Hokies. They had kind of stayed within reach, and now they were going to find a way to win it, right? And you're thinking, okay, they haven't had time of possession. Liberty's kind of had the lead. They've had the advantage, all those type things. And then at the end, after the Turner touchdown, seemingly, I don't say mental focus, strategy, whatever the case may be, everything just kind of threaded on them. And what was once... you know, seemed like a bald fist, all of a sudden went singular. And that's what happens in those situations. It's not a thing. It's about three or four things, and they all happened after that Turner touchdown.
And no disrespect to Liberty. They're having a year of a lifetime, and good for them. And ironically, now 2-0 in the ACC. Let me point that out. And they were, again, I'm not a gambler, but they were a 17-point underdog as a ranked team.
That's right.
That's the biggest number in the history of gambling, apparently. And to their credit, I was impressed with their club. I'm sitting there watching them going, hey, you know, they got the quarter. Willis is a really talented guy. Everybody talked about him. He can run. He can dazzle and all that stuff. And they're playing with great emotion. Yeah. And Hugh Freeze has done a tremendous job. But I just got the sense that Virginia Tech would eventually, you know, and they just kind of sleepwalking for a little bit. They're down 14-3. Okay, they're back in the game. You know what? Right? They figured, hey, you know what? Now we know that Herbert's out, and which stunk. But nevertheless, we're just going to figure out a way to win the game. And then you see the block kick, and you're thinking, wow, what a win that is for Virginia Tech. Who in the world would have ever thought that's the way they were going to win this game on the block 59-yarder, everybody heading around their direction. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of the Miami-Clemson game right at the end of the first half. Here it goes again. And people celebrate, and you're thinking, man, Liberty, well, that was a great effort. But you know what? Virginia Tech wins the game, and down the road we go. And it's a great lesson learned for the Hokies as they move forward and get ready for Miami. And then you get this move right here where the official's going, sorry. There's a timeout on the field. And you're thinking, oh, you got to be kidding me. Well, he's not going to make a 59-yarder anyhow. Got no chance. And then they pull this move where everybody's sound asleep.
This play.
Yep.
Yeah, that play right there, that's like, I'm going to tell you, as big as the block was for Virginia Tech and as, you know, deflating as the timeout was, that play is the one that just steamrolls you.
Yep.
Because then it hits you. Then all of a sudden you're Virginia Tech and you're like, oh, wait a second. We just gave up the 11-yard out. We just gave up the out, and now they're going to try a makeable field goal.
Well, you still like your chances, but still, you're right. I mean, once you go from having this thing in my back pocket, it's a W, to all of a sudden we're back to playing again, to, hey, we were sound asleep on that play, and then the kid makes a great kick. I mean, this was a gut-wrencher of a gut-wrencher. I mean, this was just I don't know. Like I said, it's 48 hours after the game. I'm still not sure how I would describe that loss. That was a kill.
And there's a lot of things that go into this. And again, single plays always get identified in games like this. But as I told you, there are like three or four things that end up occurring to get to the point where the kid kicked the field goal. And after the Turner touchdown, you could go back and look at the way the possession went and all sorts of things. But Justin Fuente, after the game, took it all on him.
I've always done this. I don't believe in waiting to the last second to call timeout on those situations, because I don't ever like letting the kicker get a free swing at it. I hollered timeout. I guess I waited too long. So I told the team, it's on me. I mean, I called timeout. We blocked the field goal, ran it back for a touchdown. I never wait that long. I never have. Always, if we're going to take a timeout, I take it early so they don't get the chance to snap it. And I said timeout. He didn't hear me, and I screamed timeout. And the ref blew the whistle, and they snapped the ball, and we blocked it. And obviously it didn't count, so.
Wes, I always do my Foo impersonation. I can't do it. I just can't do it. Again, I'm married to a Hokie, and I'm sitting there watching that game. And as you know, big fan of Justin Fuente and the Virginia Tech team. And again, 48 hours after the fact, I still can't believe what I watched at the end of that game. And you could just, you could literally, even watching that video now, you can see he is literally sick to his stomach, because that was just one of those that.
Yep.
You know, you just look around going, my goodness, what in the world? And what are the odds of all that happening? But it did. But you give Liberty credit, man. Those kids, they rolled into Blacksburg. They played hard. They're ranked for the very first time ever. And Hugh Freeze has done a tremendous job. But for Virginia Tech, man, you got to pick yourself up from that one. Because now all of a sudden, here comes number 9 Miami. And I don't need to tell you about the Canes. And I don't need to tell you about the Hokies when they get together. It doesn't matter whether it's the Big East or the ACC. They get after one another. This is a huge game coming up. So this is going to be a real big challenge for Virginia Tech staff and players this week, to lose a game the way that one went down. And now you got to get ready for a Miami team that's got a ton to play for.
It's impossible to know exactly how – you know, they're going to process this to get ready for Miami. But you do know this, another gut punch for a team that has had a couple of them, some on the field and some off the field, right? This is the most notable one on the field. And, look, you get Jermaine Waller. He picks up the block kick. You're going to get a guy who missed a handful of ball games to make a big play at the end for you. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see with what Virginia Tech does, because – again, we talk about teams tied, tentacles, right, to Clemson, Notre Dame. Here's Virginia Tech. You mentioned Miami. Oh, by the way, the Tigers at the end too, right? So let's see how that goes. We also welcomed kind of back to the fold on this deal, Pack, Pittsburgh, right? The Panthers, Saturday morning, made Kenny Pickett their starter. Remember, Pat Narduzzi had kind of gone, well, you know, he threw, we weren't sure, da-da-da. Paris Ford had opted out. Talk about your off-field distractions. Then all of a sudden, you got your tough-as-nails QB back. And then Jordan Travis hits you with the okey-doke early. And from that point on, next thing you know, they get an interception. And Kenny Pickett goes in and plays tough guy and wins the game for him. Helps him win the game for sure.
I mentioned to you last week, the want-to in this game was what I was intrigued about. I mean, here's Pitt, 0 for October. Here's Florida State having one of those kind of years. You get into November, you find out who wants to play football. And, Wes, you had to call. Knowles got off to another really good start. And, man, tell me if you've seen this movie before. Quick start and an absolutely zero finish, right? I mean, a zero finish. Yeah. I looked something up about Florida State, and my eyes, I know I got to go get better glasses. Wes, I figured this thing out now. In the last three games, Florida State has scored a grand total of 2 points in the second half. And you heard me. 2 points in their last three games. Yeah. As a matter of fact, if you take out the Jacksonville State game, all right, take that one out. The other six ACC games the Florida State has played this year, do you know how many points they've scored in the second half of those games? Just take a guess. No, 18. They have scored 18 points in the second half of their six ACC games. That's two touchdowns, a field goal, and a safety. That's it. That's hard to believe.
Three average.
Now you're, hey, there's that Elon fake calculus coming into play right there. But isn't that is an amazing number. 18 points. In six ACC games in the second half. Again, got off to a great start. Looked good. Can't close. But a big win for Pitt, though. For Pat Narduzzi, they just need to get back and get a taste of what it looked like. Seven sacks. Defensive line got after him. Florida State had three quarterbacks all throw an interception. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you about Florida State.
Here's the thing about Pittsburgh. Was it just me doing the ball game, or did Pitt seem like early in the season, Pittsburgh on Saturday?
Well, I think getting your quarterback back certainly helped. I mean, no disrespect to Yellen, but, I mean, their offensive just fallen off the face of the earth. At least Pickett gives you a chance to be able to throw the ball downfield with some zip and some authority and some, hey, we got a chance. But, man, Wes, as opposed to Pitt, I keep going back to Florida State. And you know, you go through the list of who was not available for the game. You go through what you've seen in the second halves of every game with the exception of Jacksonville State. There is so much work to be done in Tallahassee. And I'm not telling you something you don't already know, but that game to me kind of reminded me, if I was going to pick another game around the country, reminded me of, okay, Penn State, you're 0-for, all right? All your dreams are toast. Show me what your locker room is made of. And I watched Maryland beat them like they owned them, right? So that was how I was feeling about Pitt and Florida State going to that game. Hey, neither one of you are getting to Charlotte. Both of you are coming off lousy Octobers. So this is one of those kind of games you say, listen, this is why we work hard. Let's go get after it. And I see Florida State get off to the big lead again. And then it just goes nowhere. And so good for Pitt. I mean, they got after it. The defense has been good. Well, they haven't been great. In October, they gave up 35 a game. But after the quick punch in the face, they controlled the rest of the game. And so Pitt goes on the road, gets a win. And for Florida State, Wes, I'm worried about Florida State. I really am.
Yeah. No, I'm – Mike Norvell said something to Roddy and us on Friday that I thought you had to bottom all the way out before you could make the turn back north. You know, you have to go through adversity before you taste success. And you wonder if this is not the bottoming out of the adversity. And for Seminole fans, I know you're thinking, well, wait a second, we're 2.5. Yeah, but see, this is kind of where you got to go before you can make that move back. And I don't know that. That's going to be the hard part for the remainder of this year, is where does that turn occur? May not occur this year at all, Mark. You know, I mean, it may not happen until you get to the fall of 21 or the spring of 21, or you get back to, hey, Mike Norvell, guess what? You're going to get to go talk to your team in the same locker room. You're going to get to do some things with your team in a team building, you know, aspect, right? I mean, there got to be some real questions kind of about how, you know, they're gonna turn back north here. So, you know, we'll see. But it's gonna be an interesting November for Florida State in that light, and it's gonna be an interesting November to see if Pittsburgh can spoil some parties too. When we come back on this show, we're only 30 minutes into this program. Good heavens, we've scratched the surface. Clemson obviously big. We talk about Pitt winning at Florida State. We talked about the scenario with Virginia Tech. Well, when we come back, North Carolina and Boston College. The Tar Heels go early and often at the fabled Horseshoe on the West Campus Saturday. Victory Bell was not in doubt after about the third possession. And Pittsburgh didn't have their A, or Boston College didn't have their A game, but they had enough to win at Syracuse. Back after this.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. 844-SAY-ACCN, the number if you're in the mood. Wes, the Food Lion Cup belongs in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. It did not take long for Sam and the boys to roll into Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium. And by the way, I must have heard that mentioned at least a dozen times during the broadcast when I was watching, which I appreciate. Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium.
Roy Philpott hit you with the Wallace Wade Outdoor?
Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium. I take full credit for that, by the way. But North Carolina said, hey, catch you boys later. You might want to see Javonte Williams. He's having lunch and brunch right there in the end zone. You can't miss him. He's going to be there all day, chewing, swallowing whole. That thing got ugly, and it got ugly in a hurry at Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium.
Mark, let me ask you this. When you watch Carolina move this thing through the gearbox the way they did on Saturday, do you not – I mean, in terms of just the way they can get it going, I mean, are they the scariest team in the league from that aspect? Because, I mean, you're beginning to wonder, can they do it on anybody? And we're getting ready to find out if they can do it on anybody, but – when they flip the switch and start going like that, I mean, that's three straight games with at least 40 points and seven in the last 10.
Yeah, I'm not worried about them with the ball, Wes. We knew they were going to be good before the season started. Where I am worried about them is stopping somebody on the other side. But when you're up 28-0 by the time you get your first Bojangles biscuit down, that thing's over. So, I mean, you take all the pressure off your defense for taking care of business. But – I mean, North Carolina rolled in there, right, and Mac Brown for the 10th consecutive time beat Duke. And if you're watching that game Saturday, you're looking at North Carolina going, boy, I tell you, when they're on, man, that's a good-looking group when they're on. When they weren't sleepwalking in Tallahassee or getting pushed around by Virginia. And, again, keep in mind, Notre Dame in Chapel Hill later this month. Just going to throw that one on you because, listen, North Carolina can score. And they're not worried about who they're playing from that perspective. Again, how do they stop somebody is another deal. But when they're on, man, offensively, they are fun to watch. They got weapons all over the joint.
Javonte Williams, unbelievable ball game. He's got 17 touchdowns now this season from scrimmage, tied for the sixth most by FBS player through seven games since 2004. And he and Sam Howell, who, by the way, another three touchdown game for Sam Howell. We're gonna see how Carolina handles all this, because the Tar Heels, you look ahead now, Wake Forest on Saturday at noon. Dave O'Brien, Tim Hasselbeck, and the coveted invite will be at Keenan Stadium for the Deeks and the Heels. We all remember what happened last year. Then the bye. Then Notre Dame on a Friday after Thanksgiving, Pack.
Hey, I can tell you, it's November football. The league has positioned itself to possibly have two teams in the college football playoff. I don't like to throw that one on you that early because there's still so much football to be played, not to mention who knows who wins games, not to mention COVID. I mean, there's so many what-ifs here.
There you go.
But the conference is really, given what happened in South Bend Saturday night, the conference is in a position for the first time ever to have two teams in the college football playoff. It's also in a position where you've got unbelievable storylines with another three or four teams that are going to have some kind of effect on who's going to get to Charlotte. And you're going to have two games this weekend in particular, the game you just talked about with North Carolina and Wake Forest, and I'll also throw Virginia Tech and Miami in there. It's going to have a game that is going to have some shaping of the top of the conference race. So you've got two really important games this week in terms of how it's going to fold out and who's going to get to Charlotte and who could possibly be in the college football playoffs. I mean, if you don't like that, again, I can't help you. But the league has really positioned itself for a great storylines coming down the stretch here. It's going to be great.
All right. How about the Eagles, right? Maybe didn't have their A game, but they had enough on Saturday at Syracuse to win a three-point ball game against Dino Babers Orange. Boston College, fewest points they've scored since 2011 in a win. But Jeff Hafley's team finds a way. David Pack, we went back to old school. We walked in the dome, and David Bailey started running the rock. Unbelievable. Just like a year ago when they, you know, posted an enormous amount of rushing yards, they get back in that building under the roof, and next thing you know, 2-6 is banging away.
Couple things here, Wes. Number one, I do think this falls under the Clemson hangover effect. I mean, BC played so well in the Valley, and to come away with an L – hey, it's hard to keep that energy up, especially you're playing in front of nobody. But here's the most important thing. You won the game, right? The end of the day, is it a win or is it a loss? You went on the road. Jeff Hafley picks up another win. They continue to impress. And one more thing, and I can't say this for everybody, but as awful as the season has been for Syracuse, I still sense they're playing hard, right? I mean, are they the most talented? They're not. They've had injury bugs. They have. Do they have issues at quarterback? They do. Has it been one of the weird years in terms of opting out and starts and stops and all that? Yes. But you know what? There are times that I still see Syracuse playing hard. And I think that if you're a coach, you can live with that, right? I mean, it's what you can't live with is we're just kind of going through the motions. We're you know, guys are just showing up and hey, it is what it is. But there are weekends where I see Syracuse at Clemson. I see Syracuse BC Saturday, where Dino's guys are overmanned. You know, they're outmanned. They don't have the talent, but they're at least trying to compete. And I can't necessarily say that about everybody I watch on Saturdays around the country, because the thing I worried about the most 6-8 weeks ago was you're going to get to a part of the season where, hey, you know what? It's gotten away from you. And guys are just going to be like, yeah, whatever. I mean, let's just get this thing over with. And I think you've seen that around the country already. I think you have. And it's not just an ACC thing. It's a national thing. And you can expect, hey, these guys have been getting after it since the middle of June, going beyond the call of duty just to have the ability to go compete with the dreams of playing for a championship or having a great year or going to a big bowl or whatever the case may be. And now you get this thing kind of beats down on you when things start going sideways. So I was at least impressed with the fact that Syracuse – was competing and playing hard. That's what I gathered from that game.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that, even though it's a tough stretch here for the Orange, 5-game losing streak, their longest since 2017, and 4-game home losing streak is their longest since 2014 when they lost 5 in a row. Started Jacobian Morgan at quarterback, got Sean Tucker back in the lineup, who had not played since the injury at Clemson. But I agree with you. I think they are playing hard, and that's something you want to see. And they're playing young, too, by the way.
No doubt.
Some of the veteran guys, yes, but they're playing younger guys. And in a situation like that, sometimes you want to start pulling silver linings. And I would tell you this, if you can play, if you can go young and survive playing young, I think that's, you know, and find stuff to build with. That may not be scoreboard production, but if you're finding production from young guys, I think that's important, too. Week off, by the way, for coming up for Syracuse. They'll get Louisville on the 20th in a ball game at Cardinal Stadium on a Friday night as well. Real quick, before we get to break, we will get to more of this coming up, including the Friday night spectacular. Miami NC State just slap delivered. I don't know what else to tell you. The game was really, really good. And we'll cover that when we come back. Eric McClain coming up top of the hour. We have got a college football ACC Network triple header right here on Saturday. Wake Forest, Carolina, high noon, Keenan Stadium. Dave O'Brien, Tim Hasselbeck, Katie George will be there. Then Louisville, Virginia, the game from last Saturday is now this Saturday. Chris Cotter, Mark Herzlick will have the call on that. Dr. Jerry Punch, by the way, joins the fellas on the sideline. And then 7:30 Saturday night, ACC Primetime Football presented by GEICO. Roddy Jones, Larisha Harris, and I will have Florida State and NC State from Carter Finley Stadium in Raleigh, all on the ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. The Canes, man, Mike Harley, you're being the guy. So is De'Eric King. Well, he's been a guy. Miami goes back into the top 10 with the road win at Raleigh. Back after this.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on ACC Network. Eric McClain coming up here in about 10 minutes. Get his take of the crazy, awesome weekend of football. We had a little bit of everything in this league on Friday and Saturday. And now we've covered the Saturday game so far, but Friday night was really the perfect appetizer because, man alive, did that game deliver, Wes. That had comebacks, big plays, crazy passes and catches. You'll see wide receiver U will be dotted with a number of plays. If this game didn't entertain you, go find something else to watch because this game had a little bit of everything.
Well, you can only hope, too, that the Friday night games that are to follow, we mentioned like Louisville, Syracuse, North Carolina, Notre Dame, those type games, if you can put on a show like Miami and NC State did the other night, that's good for ACC football, Pack, right, in the big picture.
Totally agree.
And, man, this thing started early, and it went all the way to the end in Raleigh. Miami wins a 44-41 game. But in the way this game unfolded, I mean, you had a throwback to Bailey Hockman, and he scored on the opening. It was just all over the place. But Miami kind of showed you the mettle, and De'Eric King used another Friday night stage pack, I thought, to showcase just how valuable he is to the Canes.
He was spectacular. 430 yards passing, 105 yards rushing, 5 passing touchdowns. I mean, goodness gracious, what else do you want from your quarterback? And made plays left and right. And there were crazy plays, like I said. The opening kickoff, opening drive for NC State with a touch. We had a 100-yard kickoff return. You had a rally in the game late. You had a field goal kicker talking trash after making one late in the fourth. I mean, this game had everything you wanted. And let me tell you, I know NC State lost the game, but there hasn't been another team in the league where your fan base has got a bang for your buck like NC State this year. They have played the most entertaining upside-down games, and it kind of started with the first one with Wake Forest. You had the crazy game with Pitt. Yeah. You had this game. I mean, they've had some amazing games this year in terms of blood pressure medication pills and everything else. I mean, goodness gracious, NC State has taken you on a wild roller coaster ride this year.
But, Pack, here's the thing. Even in the loss the other night, number one, let's go back. Devin Leary's injury, 3 weeks ago now? We were kind of saying, okay, we'll see what happens with the Wolfpack, right? He got hurt in the Duke ball game. NC State, a bit of a transition, loses at Carolina with Hockman. We saw a little bit of Ben Finley. Hockman got the start the other night, and I give Bailey Hockman a lot of credit. You know, there have been some dips in his performances, but, man, he played strong the other night. I thought he led that team. I thought he was assertive throwing the football. I thought he was assertive as just kind of a field general, if you will, for what Tim Beck, the offensive coordinator, wanted to do, right?
No question. You know, I was just sitting there talking about it, watching teams play hard. Are you still engaged? Are you still excited? Look at those pancake blocks down the line. It's a tough game to lose because NC State's got a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, and I saw the stat The Wolfpack was 74-2 prior to this game. 74-2 with a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter, and they lose the game. That's where you give Miami credit, because the Canes was so much to play for. All the hype leading into, hey, okay, can you go 5-0 in this stretch run and position yourself possibly to be in the ACC championship game, even though you really don't control anything? You don't see Notre Dame. You've already lost to Clemson, but you must go 5-0. You knew. Coming off an open date where Manny Diaz was 0-4 under that scenario, they had to kind of make a statement. And all of a sudden, you're in the fourth quarter looking up the scoreboard, and NC State, to their credit's up 10 on you. You had to reach down deep and get it done. And again, De'Eriq King was absolutely sensational.
And he has developed something with Mike Harley in terms of explosive plays, right? I mean, Harley had another fantastic game for Miami. And, yeah, the tight ends are one thing. The running game obviously got cranked up again, which was something Miami had talked about. But holy smokes, Mike Harley going vertical, that's a lot to handle. But Miami got a big win, 44-41 over NC State. And if you're a Wolfpack fan, you feel a little better, I think, about where your program is. Last year, tough, a lot of injuries, things like that. But you've gotten through those injuries this year, including the one to the quarterback. You've gotten through some other injuries. You've battled the virus, like a lot of schools have. I feel like if you're an NC State guy, you got to feel pretty good about where that program is, from Tim Beck's integration as the offensive coordinator, Tony Gibson on the defensive side, just better overall. But to that effect, you want to see a stronger finish. You want to see a strong finish now on the backside here, I believe.
Well, when you take inventory, like I said, the roller coaster ride, which has been NC State football this year, their games have been unbelievably entertaining and crazy. The win against Wake Forest could have gone the other way. The win against Pitt on the road could have gone the other way. The game against Miami Friday night could have gone the other way. I mean, so, you take the good and the bad. The Duke game, all of a sudden you got to block a punt and it wasn't looking good there for a while. You found a way to win. So I think NC State is a much better football team right now than they were a year ago, where they were going through one of those years where they're so banged up from an injury standpoint, the kids were having to play that were just not quite ready for it. I think they've got a benefit from that this season. Again, if your quarterback stays healthy, woulda, coulda, shoulda. Again, everybody's kind of banged up in some shape, way, or form. But to me, NC State is much improved from a year ago. And I think Florida State, again, you got this game coming up this weekend. You know, I keep talking about, hey, are you ready to play hard? I know one thing. NC State will play hard this Saturday night. I'm curious to see what Florida State does now. Given their effort again Saturday, which you saw, and then going on the road now against the Wolfpack. And the flip side, too, for Miami, now you've got to go on the road against Virginia Tech, who is going to be hurt, going to be bummed out, down the dumps, but chip on shoulder. Because, like I said, anytime the Hokies and Canes get together, it's a good one. And I guess the folks in Vegas have already determined that Virginia Tech is a slight favorite. On your mark, get set, go.
Excuse me?
Yep. I saw that. Hokies are a slight favorite. Miami's ninth in the country. So, on your mark, get set. It's November football. It's going to be good.
Packer and Durham analytics on some of our expert research staff. We'll have to check in on that. Come on now.
Well, again, I'm not a gambler. Right. I'm just telling you what I was told.
No, I understand, and that's crazy. All right. Take a break. Eric McLean, it's a Monday with Mac, and he is the first each week to unveil his accounting. Plus, we'll get his reaction a couple days removed now, day and change removed, on Notre Dame Clemson and what he thinks about this conference race. Hour two of Packer and Durham next.
Packer and Durham.